for those that don't know me, my name is Tyler Vitti. Thank you, Marilyn, for inviting me to speak today. I was asked to read my credo, which is something that I've created with the help of Deborah and a great group of friends last fall in the Building Your Own Theology seminar network. We had 10 sessions. It was quite fabulous. This credo of mine kind of flowed out of me through the course of those 10 weeks. And in trying to find it, I discovered that I've lost it. So maybe I'll consider that as a metaphor for my life. And I'll try and paraphrase from here on out. And it goes something like this. So I remember quite clearly that I began with, I am powerful in my compassion. I'd like to tell you some stories. Last week we talked about truth and reconciliation. It's a process that us Canadians were very much in the beginning stages of, and at the root of it, it lies the necessity to see each other for the individual that we are, to see the joy, the pain, the light, and the shadows. I am powerful in my compassion. I've been extremely fortunate over the years to travel some, and on one such adventure, I found myself in the heart of Rwanda. I saw how people diametrically opposed to one another, who have been ripped apart through violence, how they're still able to come together and build community. I've seen the fruits of their labor, a new community center, a commercial beehive, a community dairy. They were all built stone by laying stone. Truth and reconciliation works. Compassion works. I am powerful in my compassion. Do you remember Tim McLean? He was that fella who suffered a fatal wound after his fellow Greyhound passenger, Vince Lee, heard violent voices in his head. When Vince Lee was found not criminally responsible, I was pretty upset. I was angry even. I was in a relationship at the time, and I thought that I could connect with her in my anger. And I was utterly blown away when she had compassion for Vince Lee. And to make it more astounding to me is she had grown up with Tim McLean. She knew his family. She had gone to school with him every day as a primary school person. I am powerful in my compassion. I believe that each person is inherently good, and everybody is equally worthy of empathy and love. We all need love. Even those who don't speak my language, who look different, who think different, who vote different, even those who are prone to violence or antisocial behavior, and even those that I've been hurt by. I recognize that this can be dangerous, so I will be responsible for myself and for my dependents as I continually step towards others and co-create unique connections. I have faith that others will take care of themselves. I trust that others will meet me in community as I remember to let go of control, as I remember that this person standing in front of me is me. Thank you.
Well, Marilyn, thank you for asking me to do this. The question is, how do we rise above the I, they, and move to the we? And what guidelines can we use? And how do we be the change we want to see? And as I was listening to the service, I think, well, am I preaching to the converted? Because you people are already doing most of the things that I plan to speak about. But I'm going to forge ahead and do it anyway. So in the time I have to share here, I'm going to share four practices that I follow personally and in my relationships in the larger community in an endeavor to bring about the change I want to see in the world. I will offer some examples of people doing this effectively on the larger world stage and some antidotes from my personal experience. So to begin with, when you want to change something, you have to make a plan. If you're going to take a trip, you have to know where you're going. So if there's something that you want to change in your personal life, I think the question to ask is why you want to make these changes, and then make a plan to make the change address one issue. So the four principles that I'm going to talk about are, number one, persistence and perseverance, number two, spiritual practice, number three, education, research, learning, and number four, action in the community, involvement in the larger community. So you see why I say, really, what have I got to say to you, since you're already doing it in spades? But I'm going to forge ahead. So persistence. To create change, it's necessary to keep showing up and to stick to your plan, making a commitment to spend time each day on each of the platforms that I've talked about. Any habit takes 21 days to put in place, so if you persevere in these practices daily for less than a month, you'll find they become part of your routine, and you'll miss them if you don't give them at least a few minutes daily. And the secret is that when you change a routine or you bring something into your habits, they become part of your life, are fun, not a chore, and you miss them when you're not doing them. So that's the first principle of perseverance. Keep showing up. Keep doing it. Whether it's you decided you were going to exercise 20 minutes every day, even if you only do a few stretches, keep it up. Keep doing it. Now, the spiritual practice is something that we are doing here, sitting here together. And I'm going to talk about the practice of gratitude, which research has shown is a powerful practice that can actually begin to make changes in your life. So when I began it a year ago, I decided I was going to say three things that I'm grateful for when I wake up in the morning. And I've continued to do that for the last year. And what I've noticed is that there's a feeling in my sense of inner happiness and well-being. And there's a real sense of fullness and peace in my body. So the practice is simple. Upon awakening, you speak out loud three things that you're grateful for. It can be as simple as the fact that it's raining and it's watering the trees, or that you see the sun. It can be that you're grateful that you've got your washing machine fixed and you can now clean your clothes. So I'm going to invite you to do it now with me. So just gently close your eyes and silently name three things for which you are grateful for. And just simply sit with the gratitude of what you're grateful for. Now, there have been several studies conducted on this practice, and it's actually shown, or people have shown, like Bruce Segal and Daniel Segal, different scientists, but same name. It seems that by changing our minds, we can also change how we feel. how we feel. Now, that's a very powerful notion. Of course, formal meditation is important, and I know you probably all have a formal practice, but I'm asking you to consider bringing the practice of gratitude in because it's easy and very effective. As Sandra Butler, a writer, teacher, healer, once said, it's like growing roses on pavement. So go ahead and think about starting that. The next point is education. And it's really important every day to make an effort to learn something new. It might be very simple, like reading a newspaper article or reading something on Googling something on the internet or using an app on your phone. And that for me is very difficult, but I continue to pursue that. Listen to an informative program on the radio and spend time reading an informative article. And research shows that learning a language and learning to dance not only prevents dementia, but it increases your intelligence. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons why UUs are mentally alert and interesting right to their last days, because they're always in, Personally, I listen to the music my grandchildren enjoy as a way of educating myself about their world. It may sound off to me, but we talk about it. And I attend their events, and if they ask me to do something with them, I always say yes. My granddaughter is taking horseback riding lessons and has asked me to join her. And even though my saddle slipped in November and I landed thunk on my back, or not on my back, on my backside, I got back on the horse. And so I'm applying rule number one of persistence. Rule number two of a spiritual practice of gratitude, that I can still do this and I didn't break anything. And rule number three of education and learning, because I'm learning about my knees and my thighs and things to do. And number four, the action of actually learning how to trot. But mostly, I'm having fun with my granddaughter and communing with the horse. So action in the community and out in the world. I was in northern Tanzania about 7 years ago with a group called Tembo. And Tembo's purpose is to provide education for Maasai women in impoverished Maasai villages. And you mentioned Rwanda. Well, Tanzania is where all the big game are. So, of course, when we were there, we went on safari and saw elephants and lions and zebras, and the Big Five was one of the most exciting times of my life. But anyway, walking on the trail with local Maasai women, we had to walk for, I think it was an hour, to go to their water hole where they had to go to get water and bring it back to do the washing and cooking and whatever they were going to do for that day. So when we were walking through the bush in Tanzania, two young Maasai warriors popped up out of the bush. They were in traditional dress and they had their daggers on, and they started walking with us. And through a translator, we learned, they asked us what we're there for, you know, these middle-aged white ladies tramping through the bush. And when they were told Tembo provided education for Maasai girls, one of the young men stated, "I want an educated wife." And when he was asked why, he said, "When things go wrong in life, an educated woman can think about what to do and help with the family. An educated woman will help you move through difficulty. She'll know how to find out what to do and not sit helplessly waiting for someone to rescue them." And I've always remembered that young man and what he said, because I think that was very wise. On a more global stage, if you watched the football last Sunday, you saw Beyonce in her performance at that Super Bowl. And it seemed to me that in her performance, she combined all of these principles, social action, education, And indeed, spirituality with the music and persistence. She used the forum to showcase her huge talent and that of many other women, and used her fame to protest injustice and showcase it. I think she has a plan and she sticks to it. Another person that you all know about is Malala, who was shot in the head and has transformed herself and that violent incident against her into a worldwide movement, supporting and encouraging girls to transform their own lives despite the misogynist circumstances and poverty they find themselves born into. And there's someone else I've heard about recently. She's a filmmaker, Shamin Obaid, and she's made a film called The Girl in the River, The Price of Forgiveness. And the film is being nominated for an Academy Award. It's about practices against young women in Pakistan. So this is a woman who's using her talent to showcase injustice, and I'm sure is making a difference, because she, by being an Academy Award nominee, there are the whole world, if you will, is going to see this. While most of us don't have the means to address change at these monumental levels, we can each choose to take action in our own community, as so many of you do. And mentioning Sandy Burpee, the things that that man has done are amazing. And he and Kathy, in creating or working towards creating affordable housing and treatment for the mentally ill, if I'm not mistaken, I think homelessness in the Port Coquitlam area has nearly been eliminated. And Sandy and Kathy are much behind that. And of course, the other person who has just passed, Dorothy Beach, a member of our congregation who dedicated her life to activism and change. And there are many other people in this community, and John's wife was one of them, John Horgan. So in keeping with the plan, I think we must decide where our charity dollars can have the most impact, and also where our volunteer and service energy can be most effective. And that's a hard choice to make. So I'm going to ask you to join with me in one more exercise in keeping with the theme of this service, how we can be the change we want to see. I ask you to join me in a simple exercise of transformation. So in this exercise, if you choose to join with me, we focus on anger, which you all know is a powerful force. So this is how it works, and I'll just tell you how to do it. First of all, you close your eyes and you think about someone or something that has angered you recently or historically. And then you breathe to the count of five, and you breathe into your body where you feel the anger, and notice where you feel anger in your body. Then you hold to the count of five in the place in your body where you feel it. And then when you release, blowing out your breath to the count of five, you breathe through your heart. So if you would do that, I'd like you to join with me now and close your eyes. Think about something or someone that has angered you recently, and breathe the anger into your body to the count of five. One, two, three, four, five. Notice where you feel that. Hold. One, two, three, four, five, and then release, pushing it through your heart. Now notice the feeling, if it has shifted at all, or a new thought has popped into your head, or anything else that you might notice in your body. And that's a practice that can be very useful to taking the anger and moving it into somewhere else and some other useful purpose in your life. I'm going to end with a quote from Alberto Viotto, who's a shaman author who studied with the shaman healers of the high Andes for over 35 years. And this is what he says. In times of great challenge, there's tremendous opportunity for growth. In times of great pain, our hearts can really open to understand the interconnectedness of life. Thank you.